I'm Christy.
No.
What?
No.
Oh, God. I'm Megan.
I'm Christy.
And we are
Homebrew Murder Crew.
Yes, I'm Christy. You're Megan. That was fucking funny.
What the hell I was thinking. My brain just like had a malfunction.
Oh my God. That was so good. That was so good. Hi, everybody.
Hi. We're taking for those of you who can see us.
Yeah. Those of you who can see us are those of you who join our Patreon because you get the full experience, I guess you can say.
Your beautiful face.
Yeah.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
And Mama G.
Hi, Mama G. Hi, anybody else who watches or listens to us. We appreciate you. Disclaimer, guess who has a sinus infection? It's me. Well, I wouldn't say it's a sinus infection, but like I was telling you today that I was at the farm on the weekend.
Yeah.
And we were cleaning up a bunch of brush and we were planting some stuff and like so. It just stirred up a lot.
Yeah.
So I've been suffering greatly in the sinus department this week. So I do have my arsenal of nasal spray, an ice pack, and toilet paper for my nose.
We're going to get through this.
We're going to get through it. But once again, I must say that if I sound nasally and ridiculous, I apologize. I'm trying my best here.
We forgive you.
Thanks.
I speak on behalf of everybody here.
You might see me do this from time to time.
For those of you who can
see. Maybe I'll just try to do it off camera. But
I'm sure that
who cares. Yeah. Megan, you have some news for us?
So, I do have some news. Damien Echols posted on his Instagram today. He said, some good news, y'all. The Arkansas Supreme Court has ruled in our favor. Further DNA testing is to be allowed. Hopefully this will allow us to solve this case once and for all. Thank you to everyone who has supported us for the past 31 years. I'll keep you posted as things move forward.
Wow.
Isn't that huge?
That's massive.
I saw that today. I was like, oh my God, I was going to text you. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to save it.
Oh my God. Episode. I'm glad that you did.
Holy shit. That's crazy. Like, what if it did come back to them? I can't even imagine that it would, but like that would destroy me,
right? So we're gonna start with a gentleman by the name of Dave Krupa. So Dave is a single father of two who, after getting out of a long-term relationship in 2012, is ready to re-enter the dating game. He's new to Omaha, Nebraska, and he created a dating profile on Plenty of Fish to get connected with the ladies.
Oh, not Plenty of Fish.
Right? So he's, you know, he's on there. He's trying to match with, I even forget how Plenty of Fish works. I don't know if they match people these days or what, but.
I think you just go through and just pick people. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how, that's how it used to be. I haven't been on Plenty of Fish in like ages.
I don't remember. But anyways, he doesn't seem to be having a lot of luck in the first little bit. But one day he wakes up, checks his Plenty of Fish, and he's got a message in his inbox, and it's from a lady named Shanna, who she goes by Liz Goliar. She's a single mother and she's an animal lover from Persia, Iowa. So the two have that in common already. The two began casually seeing each other. Dave had told Liz early on that he was not looking for anything serious, and she seemed to be okay with that. You know, he's new to being single. He wants to not jump into something serious right away. Like this, you know,
he just wanted something casual, and he was honest about it. Exactly. And upfront about it.
Yeah. So about 6 months after meeting Liz, Dave said that an extremely attractive... No, sorry. Blah, blah. So about 6 months after meeting Liz, a extremely attractive woman walks up to Dave at the auto shop that he works at. Her name was Carrie Farver. She's a single mom from Macedonia, Iowa, who had brought in her Ford Explorer for maintenance. He was like, kind of smitten on her. In fact, they both seemed to like really like each other in that first interaction. Ooh. You know, their eyes met. There was a spark. They were kind of like rubbing shoulders and whatever, you know.
There's flirty, nothing flirty. Like that natural connection.
I know. Like, that rarely happens anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Dave goes home and later on, like, he ends up finding her on this dating website. And he's like, holy shit. So he makes, like, he initiates a conversation with her. He's like, hey, I know you. And she replies, hey, I know you too.
What a lucky coincidence. And
they get on with it. So they go on a date. And after their first date, they ended up back at Dave's apartment. And no sooner did they close the door to the apartment when his buzzer begins ringing. And it's Liz who had swung by unexpectedly.
Oh, shit.
To pick up a few items that she had left there. So Dave, sensing that this was about to get super fucking awkward.
You think?
He informs Carrie of what's going on and who's there and who Liz is and why she's there, etc. They both agreed that it would be probably best if Carrie just headed home at this time. So Dave walked Carrie out while simultaneously letting Liz in. And the two women had like a brief 3-second exchange. Like just a glance, not even saying anything to each other. Okay, fine. Like whatever. Liz grabs her stuff and then she's off and whatever. So Dave and Carrie had also both agreed to keep things casual. And actually, it was Carrie's idea at first. Like, she actually brought it up to Dave first. And Dave's like, fuck yeah. Like, he hit the jackpot because this woman already wants the same things, right?
Well, that's lucky.
Yeah, they both didn't want to put a label on their relationship. They wanted to be free to see other people at the same time. But they did spend a lot of time together. Carrie was tasked with a big project at work, and so Dave offered to let her stay with him because Carrie worked as a computer programmer, and her office was actually located just around the corner from where Dave lived, whereas she lived nearly an hour away in Macedonia, Iowa. So it worked out well. On the morning of November 13th, 2012, Dave got ready for work. He kissed Carrie on the way out, and he told her that he would see her later that evening. And around mid-morning, he receives a text from Carrie saying, quote, we should move in together, end quote.
Weird.
So this catches Dave off guard. He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I thought they agreed to be monogamous. Yeah, and not monogamous, sorry, casual.
Casual. And that's exactly what he ends up saying to her. He says, quote, we talked about this, Carrie, end quote. And a few minutes later, Carrie's reply comes through. She says, fine then, fuck you.
What the fuck?
And then later she says, I never want to see you again. So that's random.
Very and much so.
When Dave returned home that night, Carrie was gone. Anything that she had left there, including her toothbrush, all gone with her. So Dave was perplexed. He had thought that things were going great. They both had agreed on that they wanted a casual relationship. They saw eye to eye on that. They were both fine with being non-monogamous. He didn't understand what had changed or what went wrong. But regardless, he respected her decision and he just went on with his life.
Yeah, that's a little disappointing though. When yeah, somebody for sure. tells you one thing and then does another.
But I mean, such as on the online dating world, right?
you know what? True story.
Yeah. So
it's usually the other way around though.
Right. But so not only did Dave begin receiving creepy threatening messages from Carrie, but so did Liz. And
the
then
fuck?
Soon Carrie's number changed. She's still sending messages, but her number's changed.
How'd she get their like Liz's number? Like that's fucking weird.
I assume like by sifting through his phone or something. Yeah. Carrie's number changed and she began sending emails from different addresses that she had been making up. So she'd make up all these different email addresses.
That's a next level psycho.
Yeah. I'm not gonna quote all of these because they're all from Carrie, but some messages read as follows. One was, my favorite thing to do is to stand outside and stare at you. Don't
I'm
love
sorry,
that.
What?
Yeah, don't love that. Another reads, I hate you so much that I want to drive a knife in your heart.
Ooh.
Girl, simmer. Another one reads, I will destroy your life and take your happiness. Okay.
God, see, online dating is fucking dangerous, yeah. man.
So Dave said that he can't remember how many times he changed his phone number, but yet the messages just kept coming.
God knows fucking weird. How
she would get his phone number, but... he would go on to receive tens of thousands of texts and emails like this over a 3-year period.
3 fucking years?
3 years of this nonsense.
Oh my God. That's dedication.
Yeah. So Carrie's mother, Nancy Rainey, she says that Carrie was diagnosed with depression in her late 20s, and which was a few years after she had her son, Max Farver, and that she was eventually diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She had begun seeing therapists and she was on medication. There was a couple of times that she would stop taking the medication though, because she claimed that it made her feel numb.
That's pretty on par with people that suffer from bipolar disorder. Like, there's so many medications you have to be on. I imagine it just makes you feel like a fucking zombie.
Yeah, and I imagine until you level out on those medications too, it's hard to adjust, right?
I was on one medication for my ADHD and that made me feel fucking weird, but I dated a guy that had bipolar disorder and he had to take a whole fucking cocktail of like 8 different medications.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Yeah. But by the time Carrie was dating Dave in 2012, Nancy said that her daughter was in a good place. She was working at her dream job in Omaha, and Max was a thriving high school student.
Oh, unfortunately, with bipolar disorder, it can turn real quick. Yeah.
So Nancy tried to get Carrie on the phone, but she said that her daughter would never call back, which was unusual. When Carrie didn't show up to her half-brother's wedding day, though, Nancy reported Carrie missing.
Like, so nobody's heard from her, like, other than these texts?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's weird.
So Nancy said that she told the police her daughter was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and that she was on medication, thinking that this would, like, move things along quickly. Like, this adult is in danger. She relies on medications. She has mental health issues.
That's how it should be.
But the police did jump on that, although it was kind of asked backwards, because he stated that this kind of thing happens all the time. When somebody who's bipolar stops taking their meds, sometimes they can just start some really erratic behavior.
That's not fucking helpful.
It's not helpful. Meanwhile, Dave said that he continued to receive hundreds of harassing text messages and emails from Carrie.
Like, didn't the cops find that weird? That, like, don't they care that, like, she's harassing this person?
Yeah.
Nobody's talked to her in person, though. Like, that's fucking weird, yeah, man.
So, he continues to receive these harassing text messages and emails. Some that say, like, I will do what I can to make you suffer. Another says, we belong together, Dave.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. He said most of the messages focused on Liz, actually. So, clearly, since that brief interaction at Dave's apartment that one night, Carrie's been harboring some serious resentment and jealousy about Liz, and she's hell-bent to destroy the two of them.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Liz told Dave that she was also receiving harassing text messages and emails, and one day Liz called Dave saying that her garage had been vandalized, like, on the fucking inside of it.
Oh my God, like, you got inside her garage.
So upon pulling into the garage, she found out that somebody had written, quote, "whore from Dave," end quote, on the inside in spray paint.
Whore from Dave. Yeah. Oh my God.
I don't know if she's pretending to be Dave him. Or that's like what. Yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
So Liz reported that incident to the Omaha police in late November of 2012. As the weeks went by, Carrie continued to miss more family events, including her own son's 15th birthday, her own birthday, and Thanksgiving, and then finally her father's funeral.
Yeah, but at a certain point, when you have bipolar disorder, you come back down. Like, you kind of, it's, well, yeah. I guess there's different, never mind, there's different levels of bipolar disorder. One of them is like, you go up and down and up and down. And
manic
and
down, episodes.
Manic, and then depressive, and then like, sometimes you go like totally nuts and then you level out for a bit. Like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
But not all of them are, sorry. Not all.
No, yeah. Not every case is the same. So yeah, she's missing all these like pretty big events, which just doesn't seem right. So Carrie's mother, Nancy, was convinced that something was wrong. She said that she was still getting texts from Carrie and she kept begging her daughter just to call her so she could hear her voice, but she never did. She and Max also started getting messages from her saying that she was going to Kansas and coming to get him, but she'd never show up.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Nancy said that the texts became mean and angry, saying that she wasn't a good mother and that she was controlling. Nancy admits that sometimes they didn't see eye to eye and there were periods of not talking, as is any mother-daughter relationship.
Yep.
But this was different. She noticed that oftentimes the texts would be, like, full of grammatical and punctuation errors as well as spelling mistakes. She said that that was out of character for Carrie because she was quite the stickler for punctuation and spelling. So yeah, but that kind of raised her
mental break. True. Or like a psychotic right. episode, then that might explain it.
It might, yeah. So for Dave, the harassment wasn't just over text and email. He was also being fucking stalked. Which, get into that. So, he recalls on a specific occasion, he's sitting in his lazy boy, he's got his feet up, he's watching TV, trying to relax. It's nighttime, and he gets a text saying, I see you. You're sitting in your chair with your feet propped up, wearing a blue shirt. And those things were true.
Holy fuck. So, she, quit her job and, dedicated her, life to just, following and harassing
it
his
guy. Seems
she
like
lived,
it.
An hour away from him.
Yeah.
But she's just always watching.
So unless she's staying somewhere else close by to where she works. But at this point, who knows if she's even going to work?
Anymore, yeah. Right? You said that she quit her job.
And she was supposed to move to Kansas. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. But there would be often times where she would make these kind of text messages to him, be giving him a play by play on what he's doing. How's that coffee you're drinking when he's sitting in a cafe or something? Sometimes it would even involve his kids, commenting on what him and his kids are doing, which is fucking once you start involving your fucking kids, it's game fucking over, bitch. We're not doing this
crossed
anymore.
The line.
One night in January of 2013, almost 2 months after the harassment began, Dave was coming home from work and he noticed a familiar vehicle in a nearby parking lot. As he got closer, he realized that it was Carrie's Ford Explorer. Having worked on the car, he knew it fairly well. So he said that he took a photo of the license plate and sent it to the police. He's like, here she fucking is. She's fucking here.
Maybe she's living out of her car.
Maybe. When the police searched the car, they were able to find only a single fingerprint on a mint container that was in the center console. It didn't match Carrie or anybody in the FBI's national database, though.
Okay, that's kind of weird, though. Wouldn't her fingerprints be all over her own car?
And they only found think
one
so.
Fingerprint. That's strange.
Sorry, I lost my spot again. All right, so, okay. So then 6 months into Carrie's disappearance, her son Max decided to message his mom on Facebook to see what would happen. And she messaged back.
Oh.
It said, hey, little man, how are you? He asked her to answer 3 questions to prove that it was really her. Number 1, what's my middle name? Number 2, what's the name of our first dog? And number 3, what's my best friend's name? Those are the 3 questions he requested.
Was she able to answer them?
No, she never responded.
What?
Never responded. Oh. All the while, Dave and Liz, who were still seeing each other on and off, were still receiving hostile, nasty text messages. Sometimes they'd be sitting there watching TV together, and both their phones would start blowing up at the same fucking time from Carrie.
That would be nasty text messages.
It was, yeah. At one point, Dave said that he got an email from Carrie threatening to kill Liz, and then it included a photo of a woman tied up in the trunk of a car, which is fucking terrifying.
That is so terrifying. Dave, I hope it wasn't her.
Yeah, Dave freaks out. He calls Liz just to check on her. She confirms that she's fine.
Okay.
And then later, Dave says that Carrie sent him a link to a fake obituary for Liz. Oh, how far are you taking this, lady?
Wild.
Liz's car was also, deeply keyed at one point.
Oh, my God.
So how far are you taking this lady? Let me tell you how far she's going to fucking take it. August 2013, Liz's house catches on fire, burns it to the fucking ground, kills her pets, all her pets, including 2 dogs, a cat, and a snake. Oh, thankfully, her children were not home at the time.
Thank God.
They were with her dad or something. Fire. Yeah, I think so. Fire investigators believe that it was arson, which it obviously was.
Was it fucking Carrie?
Well, Liz told police that she suspected Carrie was the culprit, citing the harassment and the threats. Yeah, so.
Oh my God, she's fucking lost it. Yeah. She's at the lunch, man.
So that happened. Dave said that he became so paranoid by that point that he bought a gun, a 9mm Smith & Wesson pistol.
I would too.
Yeah.
She's fucking watching you.
Terrifying intrusions kept happening to him. At one point, the auto shop where he worked was vandalized. In January of 2014, Dave was with his high school friend Heather in his apartment, And Heather said that she watched his cell phone just blow up with messages. Oh, and then later heard somebody like jiggling the front door trying to get in.
That's scary.
When they were in bed that night, Heather said that a brick was thrown through the window.
Oh, fuck.
Dave's ex-girlfriend, Amy Flora, who's the mother of his two children, had also received threatening text messages from Carrie.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, but it appears like that nobody is immune to Carrie's threats. As long as you're in Dave's circle, you were a target for Carrie. Or even if you were...
I hope she wasn't going after his kids.
Yeah.
That's fucking, well, like, next level, man.
Unfortunately,
I can't believe people like that exist.
Yeah. Among the many threats that were made to to Amy, the mother of his kids, a lot of those threats did include things that she would plan to do to his children.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. So.
And how are the police still not taking this seriously?
Well, that's the thing. Carrie's mother, Nancy, she's frustrated beyond belief that the police don't seem to be taking her daughter's missing person case seriously.
Oh.
Just sad.
Wow.
Like, her mental illness seemed to be a pretty good scapegoat for them for brushing this case aside. And of course, a tale of as old as time, she's an adult and she's allowed to be missing.
Oh my God, stop.
So, yeah, by spring of 2015, it's 2.5 years since anyone has physically seen Carrie or heard from her, yet the harassment continues. So Detectives Ryan Avis and Jim Doty, they're also best friends.
Besties.
Of the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office in Council Bluffs, Iowa. They never worked on the case, but they had heard about it in the office, and they were so intrigued by Carrie's mysterious disappearance that they volunteered to take it on.
Interesting.
So the two detectives obviously approached Nancy first and just explained who they were and made this offer to her. She was more than happy. She's like, somebody's gotta fucking take this seriously.
Yeah.
So they were going, the two of them were gonna approach it at different angles. So Jim was going to work it like she's dead, and Ryan's going to work it like she's alive. Okay. Carrie, that is. Ryan's going to try to prove every which way that he could that Carrie is still out there. And Jim is going to try and prove every which way that she is not out there.
Okay, that's an interesting tactic.
Yeah. So as their investigation was underway, Dave realized that the pistol that he had purchased for his protection was missing.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So she got in his house.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And probably, I mean, she can all get into a garage. Yeah. She's fucking sneaky, man. So he reports it stolen to police. On December 4th, 2015, Doty and Avis were at the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office when Liz walked in. They learned that she was there to file a harassment complaint against
Terry?
Dave's ex-girlfriend, Amy Flora.
What?
I know.
Why?
So after Liz left, Avis drove over to her house. He's like, I need some more information.
Yeah.
To interview her regarding her complaint. She told Avis that she now thought that it was actually Amy all along who had been sending her threatening messages this whole time, not Carrie.
But so where's Carrie then? If that's that's an interesting theory, because that would, like, the one detective that is approaching it as if she was dead, this would help, you know, with his side of the investigation.
And how come, but, like, it's been two or three years?
What happened with Amy to make her feel that way?
So, where was I here? So, I don't know. I'll just continue here, though. But, like, so the investigator asked if he could download the contents of her phone so that they could review the messages, because she's claiming that Amy's pretending to be Carrie to keep the heat off of her. Obviously, Liz believes that this could be true because, you know, as the mother of his kids, of Dave's kids, you know, maybe she's trying to get him back or something like that.
Huh.
So Liz agrees and she signs a consent form and turns over her phone. During their conversation, Avis said that Liz mentioned that she knew that Dave's gun, which she correctly identified as the 9mm Smith & Wesson, was missing, and she thought that Amy could have stolen it. Interesting.
That is interesting.
The next day, on December 5th, 2015, a call came into 911. It was Liz, and she had been shot in the leg at Big Lake Park in Council Bluffs.
Holy fuck, by Carrie?
When the 911 dispatchers asked if she knew who shot her, Liz said that she never saw the face, but she knew that it was a woman, and she was sure that the culprit was Amy Flora, Dave's ex-girlfriend and the mother of his kids. So she's back thinking this is Amy, because now she's saying, no, this isn't Carrie, it's got to be Amy. Amy's got to be behind all of this.
Okay, so Amy broke into his house and stole the gun and shot fucking Liz with it.
Yeah. So now shit's about to get fucking crazy. Yeah. So going back to when the two bestie detectives took on this case.
Bestie detectives.
So the two detectives, they started from the beginning, digging through the original case file. The detectives were aware of Carrie's bipolar diagnosis, but they didn't think that that had anything to do with her disappearance. Detective Avis thought it was alarming that there hadn't been any activity in her checking account the entire time that she'd been gone. Footprints of life. Yeah.
So maybe it was Amy.
Yeah. So because it's not normal for adults to just up and leave and literally not spend any money. There's not even any transactions like taking a large sum of money out of the account, right?
Her money just hasn't been touched at all.
It hasn't been touched. So no one's physically seen her and no one's physically heard her voice. It just didn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense.
She had good income. She had a good house. Like, why would she just up and leave to Kansas? Detective Avis had come to the conclusion that she could not, that he could not prove that she was actually alive.
Okay. So, is it fucking Amy then?
Just you wait.
Oh my god, okay.
Detective Doty said that the glaring detail that stuck out for him was Liz, who he said had never been involved in Carrie's life until she went missing. All of a sudden, Liz is this focus of harassment. Her name is all over the reports. So to him, there was something with Liz.
Okay.
And she became a person of interest.
Liz?
Yes. The only forms of communication anyone had ever received from Carrie were electronic. So Detective Doty and Avis asked their colleague, Anthony Cava, a digital forensics administrator at the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office, for help.
Okay, they have her phone, right?
Yes.
Or is this before they have her phone?
She turned the phone over already.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, wait, no, this is before.
Oh, okay.
This is before. So both Dave and Liz had agreed to have the content of their phones downloaded. Here it is. In 2013 for the initial group of investigators. This content was included in the original case file. So Cava started connecting the dots. Cava said that he knew these messages don't seem to really be coming from Carrie Farver.
I'm starting to think that too.
Carrie, or rather the imposter they believed to be acting as Carrie, sent Dave about 15,000 email messages over over a 3-year span. And it might have been about between 25 or 50,000 texts in total. Whoever was pretending to be Carrie got more and more sophisticated in what they were doing to try and hide their IP address, to try to hide their real identity altogether. The investigators found a photo of Carrie's Ford Explorer in Liz's phone dump, which included metadata that showed that the photo had been taken about a month before police recovered the vehicle. So somehow Liz knew where Carrie's vehicle was before law enforcement even did.
That doesn't make any sense. Wait. But they never knew each other. What the fuck?
I know. They only knew each other. They never knew each other personally. They only passed each other once. They only saw each other once.
Oh my.
But here's Carrie's fucking vehicle. There's a photo of her vehicle on Liz's phone.
What if she took it that night?
Where
though?
The timestamp is, where was that? Where was it? So the metadata, the timestamp showed that the photo had been taken a month before police recovered her vehicle. So a month before Dave took a photo of the vehicle that he found believed to be Carrie's. So why is it on your fucking phone?
So it's not like he sent it to her and was like, look what I found.
Right.
Okay. And it was in her trash?
It was on her phone.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. So
I don't like where this is going.
Another thing that detectives found on the phone downloaded was that there were 6 calls that were made to Carrie's residence. It was using the *67 prefix to disguise the number, so Liz was calling Carrie 6 times. This doesn't make sense because
they don't know each other.
She only met Carrie that one time passing through the hallway. And not even, like, exchanged a hello or anything.
Okay.
It was a glance.
How'd she fucking get Carrie's? Okay, yeah. Wait a minute.
So, let's keep going. The investigators also found the photo of a woman who had been tied up, which had been emailed to Dave, and determined it had been taken by Liz's phone. They also discovered a video recording that showed someone walking outside of Dave's apartment. It had been uploaded to YouTube under Carrie's name, but was tied to an IP address registered to Liz's house.
No.
In
but
May-
wait. Didn't the house burn down?
Oh, so she, once the house burned down, she moved in with another guy that she was seeing, which...
Okay. Okay.
I think I mentioned it. I may have left it out because it's a small detail, yeah. But that there's not a whole lot more information on. So I think I probably left that detail out.
Yeah,
but we'll see. But
she's dating another guy.
She's dating another guy. So she's staying at his house. So in May 2015, Jody and Avis went to interview Nancy Rainey, Carrie's mom, during which they said that they believed her claims that her daughter was missing and that something had happened to her. So
I think so too.
Yeah. So she finally felt like something was going to happen now because she finally feels listened to. She finally feels heard. During their meeting, Nancy provided investigators with another clue. She told them that after Carrie disappeared in 2012, that she received a text saying Carrie had sold all her furniture and asked Nancy to let the buyer into the house to pick it all up.
Okay.
So Carrie, quote unquote, is asking Nancy to let the buyer into the house because remember, Carrie's allegedly in Kansas now.
Yeah.
So she's like, yo, mom, let this buyer into the house for this. And then, as supposed proof of the sale, Nancy received a photo of a check for that furniture that was made out to Carrie and it was signed by none other than Shannon Goliar.
No, that's Liz's real name.
Detectives knew Liz Goliar's real name was Shanna. It was yet another connection between the two women who supposedly were strangers. Granted, that didn't give them any answers on what happened to Carrie, but now they knew that Liz knew more than she was telling.
So, oh my God, okay. I'm going to let you finish.
I know, this is a mind fuck.
I have a lot of thought right now, and this is, I'm just going to let you continue before I interrupt.
Okay, so the investigators also matched the mysterious fingerprint found on Carrie's car.
Please don't tell me it matched Liz.
Oh my God.
Wait, so there was like one finger. Yeah. Oh my God.
This one matches Liz. Were
they in it together? Dave and Liz?
I don't know. We're going to have to find out. As all these red flags kept popping up around Liz, detectives think back to this gunshot wound that Liz sustained.
Yeah, she was shot. How'd she get shot?
They found it highly suspicious that the day before she felt the need to tell them that Dave's gun had been stolen.
Oh my God.
And less than 24 hours later, she's shot. Also, the fact that she mentioned the exact type of gun and she acted like she knew that she slipped up, that she knew a little bit more about a missing gun than she should have.
She shoot herself.
It was quickly determined that, yeah, most likely Liz Goliar had shot herself. And Amy Flora was cleared that evening of any wrongdoing.
Oh my God. Was Amy even in the park that day?
No. She's cleared.
Did Dave shoot her? Sorry.
I don't know. Meanwhile, Kava got to work sifting through the contents of Liz's cell phone after the second download. He discovered that Liz had registered upwards of 20 or 30 fake email addresses, all of which had some variation of Carrie's name.
Oh my God.
It's not looking good for Liz right now. I'll tell you that. Kava also discovered that Liz was using an app which allowed her to schedule future messages, which would explain why
she was getting messages.
How Dave was with Dave. Yeah, how her and Dave could get messages simultaneously at the same time.
So was Dave part of this?
No, he's not part of this.
Oh my God. What about the house?
Which house?
Her house burnt down.
Yeah.
And they said it was arson. Was that really like just a coincidence?
We'll get there. Kava estimates that Liz must have spent about 40 to 50 hours per week impersonating Carrie. That's a full-time fucking job, you guys. 40 Holy to 50 hours per week impersonating her.
That is a full-time job.
Jodie and Avis brought Liz in for an interview 2 weeks after she was shot. At the time, they said Liz kept pushing them to investigate Amy and had no idea that she herself was the main suspect of Carrie's disappearance. At this time, Jodie and Avis also advised Dave that due to the unpredictability of quote-unquote Carrie and her escalations, it would be best for him to move in with his ex and his children to keep them protected. Oh, and keep in mind that Dave doesn't know at this point that Liz is a suspect.
Oh my god. Wait. Continue.
Okay. So there was an ulterior motive to this suggestion for Dave to move in with Amy. They knew it would send Lizzie into a fucking tizzy. And yes. It fucking did. It did.
Of course it did.
So Jodie and Avis then came up with another plan. Oh, they were going to tell Liz that they believed her story, that Amy had shot her, and that they wanted Liz's help to get Amy to incriminate herself. They asked Liz to reach out to Amy and see if she would tell her anything about what happened to Carrie Farver. We just need to know what happened to Carrie. Of course, the detectives knew that Amy had nothing to do with Carrie's disappearance or the threatening messages that had been sent for years.
I hope they gave Amy a heads up that they were doing that. So they probably did.
I think they did.
So at this point, then they must know that Liz is a suspect. They'd have to tell Dave and Amy at this point.
They would have to, yeah. So either way, their plan worked. They were like, yeah, we just need more information. If you can, like, Amy's texting you, emailing you, like, see if you can get any information from her. They did. They said that Liz almost immediately started fabricating emails. She said that they were from Amy. They began receiving messages that were forwarded by Liz, but initially from quote-unquote Amy, where Amy confesses to shooting Liz at Big Lake Park.
Okay. She would have been better off just continuing to pretend it was Carrie.
Yeah. So the two detectives continued to press Liz to ask Amy, who they knew to be Liz, for details about Carrie's death. She was still angry that Amy hadn't been arrested yet, and so a few days later, Liz did exactly that.
Oh my god, she probably totally gave away her
She's hope. Also, like, she's pissed because she's, like, she's watching Dave move into Amy's house, and then she's trying to pin everything on it's Amy, and she's
strategy
like...
strategy of the detectives.
She's like, how come, like... Nobody, Dave gets to move in with Amy and nobody's doing, like, my house is on fire. I get shot in the leg and nothing's done about Amy. So she's.
Her plan backfired.
She's fucking losing it. She's losing it. So she's more than happy to help them out here. So Liz forwards them an email, supposedly coming from Amy, claiming that she stabbed Carrie 3 to 4 times and stuffed her body into a garbage bag.
Oh my God.
Detective Jodie says that the details were bone chilling and graphic.
Because it's probably exactly what happened to her.
Yeah. As time
Carrie's probably dead.
Yeah. As time went on, the investigator said that Goliar grew increasingly upset that they hadn't arrested Flora, as I said. Jodie explained to her that they need more information. Information that only the killer would know. Smoking gun. Within hours, they said more confession emails from Amy appeared. The emails included that Carrie had been stabbed to death in her own car.
Oh my god.
So now they have the vehicle indicated as the crime scene. So they want to go back and look at that vehicle to determine if a crime did in fact happen there. So they're peeling away fabric. They're doing the damn thing.
That would explain why there was only one fingerprint.
Yeah.
Sorry.
This was the third time that police had searched Carrie's car, but this time, Jodie says they pulled the fabric off the passenger seat, and once it was uncovered, they found a red stain that was determined to be Carrie's blood.
Oh my god. So she fucking wiped that shit down.
Yeah.
That would explain that made no sense if there was no fingerprints.
Yeah. So, because the murder most likely took place in Omaha, the Omaha Police Department had to become involved, and cold case homicide detective Dave Schneider joined the investigation. Detective Schneider brought Liz in for questioning and confronted her with the evidence that Jodie, Avis, and Kava had gathered so far. The photos on her cell phone, the IP addresses traced back to her house, and the confession emails from Amy... quote unquote. Liz, of course, she just denies knowing anything. She claims that she didn't have internet service, but while she was being interrogated, Jodie and Avis had gotten a search warrant for her apartment.
Oh my god. So, like, Fuck off. She, like, would have been better off, A, just pretend that it was Carrie. Second of all, the police must feel fucking stupid that they never took her fucking disappearance seriously.
Yeah.
They almost cost another woman her life because she probably would have went after Amy next.
Yep.
Absolutely.
What does Dave think of all of this?
Horrified, I'm sure. Horrified.
My God.
He didn't have a clue that this was, that he, like, he had no idea. And meanwhile, he's, like, continuing a relationship with Liz, unbeknownst to him that, like, this is going down, or, like, that this had gone down.
Yeah.
At the hands of Liz. Excuse me one sec. Oh, sorry, my nose screams after I blow it.
It's back.
It's not even cold anymore.
Oh no.
It's okay. I'm almost done.
Okay.
Okay. So, sorry.
No problem.
My foot's falling asleep. So Liz denies everything. Inside the apartment, Liz's apartment, they found some of Carrie's possessions, including a digital camera and a camcorder, which they believe that Liz had stolen from Carrie's home.
Oh my God, so she fucking went to Carrie's home.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, remember, she also went to, like, buy Carrie's furniture, right?
Oh, right.
So
right.
She had been in the home.
She got let into the home, yeah.
Yeah. On the camcorder, they found a video of Carrie talking about how someone had vandalized her car. It was timestamped 2 days before she disappeared.
Oh my God.
On December 22nd, 2016, Liz was arrested and charged with first-degree murder.
I have so many questions, but I don't even know where to begin. You know what, guys? Life lesson, stay off the dating apps.
Yeah. Meet somebody authentically like Carrie, who's a nice lady, and met...
did not deserve what happened
organically.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So Douglas County Attorney Brenda Beadle, she prosecuted the case, and she said, quote, "This was by far the most difficult case I've ever tried. Most homicides are dark. This one was bizarre to the point where it would take some convincing to make somebody believe that it actually happened. There's no way that somebody would let their dog die in a fire that they started." So, answer to your question.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
She started the fire in her own fucking house.
Her dog, her snake all died.
She sacrificed
all her pets. She killed her own animals.
Yep.
Oh my fucking God.
To keep this ruse up. So, there's no way that someone would shoot themselves in the femur. Like, how can you convince a jury that this is real? Right? This doesn't sound like real life.
So, it sounds like it's a made-up story.
Yeah. Liz's defense attorney, James Martin Davis, requested to waive a jury trial in favor of a bench trial, meaning that a judge would decide the case. Not only was there no body, but there was no crime scene. There was no murder weapon. There was a crime scene. It was...
yeah, there was blood in her car.
In her car, but there was no proof that she even died.
Sorry.
So, yes, there's blood in the car, but there's no proof that she's dead. So he waived the jury trial to move it up so he could try the case, quote, "hopefully before they'd find a body," end quote. How fucking cold is that?
What a disgusting human being.
Despicable.
I fucking hate lawyers. Sorry. Sorry if you're a lawyer.
The detectives knew that they needed more to seal the deal. They encouraged Dave because they knew they might not find the body.
Yeah.
So they needed more. So they encouraged Dave to think hard. Is there anything that he could find to turn over for evidence that could help in this case?
Please tell me he found something.
A few months before the trial was set to begin in 2017, Dave searched his storage unit just in case he missed anything in there. He came across an old tablet that had been broken for a while. Like, it wouldn't even turn on. He's, like, hummed and hawed about it. Like, it doesn't even fucking work. He wondered if it would really mean anything. But he decided, like, I'll just turn it over, whatever. So he turns it over to investigators. On the tablet, Cava discovered a micro SD memory card that had also been in Liz's phone around the time of the murder. So whether that was her tablet or whether she just, like, tried to discard her micro SD card into this old tablet to hide it, I don't know. But
either way, it was in his storage unit. And he found it.
So
are you sure he's not part of it? No,
he's not. The SD card had thousands of deleted images, all of which he was able to recover he's a badass Cava.
What were the pictures of?
So Cava came to one photo in particular. Like, there was a ton of selfies of her. Ton of selfies.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. But her dating profile? Yeah. He had to comb through all of these fucking photos, mind you, right?
Yeah.
And even all the other photos that they had from the other devices, they had to, like, re-look at them over and over and over again just in case they missed anything. Like, this was fucking, like, painstakingly grueling efforts here by these guys. But he comes across this one photo that he hadn't seen before. And he's not sure what he's looking at first. But it turns out to be a fucking human foot with a tattoo on it.
Okay.
Okay.
Did Liz have tattoos?
Not a living person's human foot. Like, very clearly, it showed signs of, like,
it was death. Dead.
It had, like, inflamed veins, I guess. I forget what the terminology is when they die and they become inflamed, but very, very obviously deceased. The tattoo was of the Chinese symbol for the word mother. It was the same one that Carrie had on her foot.
Oh, no.
And they took it to Nancy. Do you recognize this tattoo? And she, of course, says, yes, that's Carrie's tattoo. Nancy. That's Carrie's foot. This was shocking, and it made him realize that Liz Goliar killed Carrie Farber, and she's taking photos of her body as a trophy.
Oh, my fucking God.
At trial, Beadle painted Liz as a diabolical and cruel woman who killed Carrie and then spent years violently harassing others.
Oh, my God.
For what? I don't know. For what?
Over a guy?
Liz's defense attorney argued that all of the evidence from the state was circumstantial, that at one point Liz had considered a victim in... Liz's defense attorney argued that all this evidence from the state was circumstantial. No. That at one point, Liz had been considered a victim in all of this, and Carrie's body had never been found.
Uh-huh.
In 2017, Judge Timothy Burns found Liz guilty of first-degree murder and second-degree arson and sentenced her to life in prison. Oh, fuck you, Liz. God. Fuck you. During his ruling, Burns said, quote, Carrie Farber did not voluntarily disappear and drop off the face of the earth. Very sadly, she was murdered, end quote. In a statement to ABC News, the Omaha Police Department said, quote, the unusual nature of this case and the great lengths that Shanna Goliar went to hide this homicide undoubtedly perplexed everyone involved. The successful investigation between the Omaha Police Department and the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office resulted in the successful prosecution of Shanna Goliar and brought to light an extreme level of deception that law enforcement rarely encounters, end quote.
Well, she got fucking lucky that her victim had a history of mental illness.
Yeah.
Like, Carrie didn't have... She had her fucking mental illness under control, and she... Yeah. Because she had that diagnosis at one point, the cops were like, oh, well, she's bipolar, so she must be having a mental break.
Yeah.
And then it allowed her to continue this fucking diabolical fucking plan of hers.
And I understand, I'm not saying that I understand, please, like, know that going into what I'm about to say here. I get why she would impersonate Carrie and send these text messages to make people believe that Carrie's still alive.
Yeah.
But you went to great fucking lengths. You burnt your own fucking house down. You shot yourself in the fucking leg. Obviously, because for some reason you wanted Amy arrested. Amy never did fuck all. You never even met Amy in your life. But you kept this up for 3 fucking years and you spent 40 to 50 hours a week. Like,
it was an obsession.
Like, you had him. He was, I don't understand. But understand that I don't fucking understand.
Yeah.
So, Liz remains at the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women. And to this day, she maintains her fucking innocence and claims Carrie's real killer is still out there.
Jesus fucking Christ. She's psychotic.
Yeah. Author Leslie Rule said that she received letters from Liz while she was behind bars. I don't know who Leslie Rule is, but...
Author Leslie Rule, I'm going to tell you this real quick because I read the book. She's the daughter of Anne Rule.
Who's Anne Rule?
Anne Rule! She's like the greatest crime writer of all time.
Well,
She wrote the book, The Stranger Beside Me.
Oh, okay.
About Ted Bundy.
Oh.
She worked with him. She happened to be like a detective or something, like a homicide detective or something like that.
Okay, y'all, author. Don't judge me for not knowing that, okay?
Anyways, so Leslie Rule is the daughter of Anne Rule, and she wrote that book, and it's so good. Do you have the name of it in there? Because I don't know.
I'll figure that out. Okay. We'll find the name and we'll put that in the show notes for you, the name of the book about this case. Author Leslie Rule said that she received letters from Liz while she was behind bars, one of which said that she would not stop fighting until she's set free and that they find the right person. And
they've got the right person, bitch.
So Leslie Rule had stated, like, she obviously doesn't take responsibility for what happened.
She's delusional.
Dave said, quote, "I want Liz to go away and never do this again to anybody. Nancy and Carrie's son were foremost in my mind. They're unfortunately the ones that have to live with the repercussions," end quote.
Oh, that'd be so hard.
Dave added that the investigators who solved the case, Dodie, Avis, Cava, they're all heroes. Nancy says that those guys mean the world to me. I can't thank them enough. They're my boys. Aww. Which I find so fucking sweet.
I love it.
The three investigators, I keep spitting while I'm talking because I can't breathe through my nose. The three investigators established a scholarship fund in Carrie's name at the local community college that she attended in hopes of associating something positive with her memory.
Thank God for the bestie detectives, man.
Bestie detectives, because we're the three best friends that anyone can have. Anyways.
We're getting that put on a shirt, by the way. Bestie detectives. Bestie
detectives. When asked how she wants her daughter to be remembered, Nancy says, quote, "as a fun-loving, talented, smart woman that she was," end quote.
Aww.
Carrie was only 37 when she died, says Nancy. If she could talk to Carrie right now, she'd say, "I love you. I'm so glad that you are in my life. You have a beautiful son who's got a wonderful life coming, and I miss you terribly," end quote. Carrie Farver's body was never found.
Oh my fucking God. It's because she's fucking delusional and she refuses to take responsibility for what she did. She obviously put her... She's obviously...
Absolutely delulu. That's going on a shirt too.
Absolutely delulu. I gotta write that in my notes. She's obvious, like, sadly, she's in a landfill somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I think her, like, what she said that Amy had written in those emails saying it was what happened to her. I think that's really what happened to her.
I think, yeah, and I think also in the emails I didn't go into too much detail about what, quote, Amy was writing in those emails, which was actually Liz, about what happened to Carrie. But I think she also mentioned, like, oh, I dumped her the side of a road somewhere and I set her on fire.
Yeah.
So it's possible that her body's been burned.
Oh my God. But,
yeah.
Calm the fuck down. I'm not even going to say that.
Yeah.
I was going to say Robert Edward Brown. What did you say? What did you say before? What was the thing we're going to put on the shirt? Absolute.
Absolutely delulu.
Okay.
No, I forget. Already. So that was a little twisty turny little episode for you guys. So
fucking mind bending.
Yeah, I know you know the case already, Megan, but
I think I did a pretty good job at pretending I didn't until I got to the Leslie Rule part. Sorry, yeah, of course. I gave it up.
I gave it away, but that's okay. It's pretty hard sometimes to find cases that we're not all privy to, so yeah. We do our best and we'll continue to do that. But I hope you guys all liked that one.
That one's like, I hate to say, I don't know how to say this. Not my favorite, because there's no such thing as a fucking favorite murder case. But like, this one consumed me when I read Leslie Rule's book.
Yeah.
Because I actually listened to, I think it was Case File did an episode on it.
Case File did, yeah.
And I was just like, I was just like, I need to know everything about this. So I read the book. I listened to the audiobook. I listened to the audiobook by Leslie Rule. And I fucking rabbit hole.
So I, it wasn't a Case File that I heard it, but a different podcast. I can't remember. A different podcast did cover it, which I heard. It's on Netflix right now, called Lover, Stalker, Killer.
Oh.
So they revisit the case there.
I have to watch that.
And that was pretty good. You hear from, like, You hear from Dave, Amy, Nancy, and everything.
But he never did online dating again after that.
Oh my God.
After like I you're being case,
like that would mentally fuck you up. You, this is affecting your life for 3 fucking years. Somebody's stalking you, like, and threatening your family, your kids.
That's fucking wild. And like, see, this was the first case that I told Martin about when we first started dating.
Oh really?
Because that's when I started doing my investigation, like my investigation or my episode yeah. that I never finished. And I just like, I couldn't get it. The timeline. Mm-hmm. I had a spreadsheet because I was just like, there was just way too much.
Well, yours probably would have been more meticulously done than mine is, but, I did the best I could. We're trying to pump out an episode a week for you guys. So, yeah.
I'm trying to see if I could quickly find my, my spreadsheet and my email. So maybe I can add something to this episode, but I don't. Oh, I think I do have it here. Peter Parker. Oh my. Oh, here it is. I got my Liz Favre murder timeline. Maybe I can add something. Yeah, see, this is my timeline.
Holy shit, girl.
I don't know. Oh, the mommy store. Liz called it quits. At one point when Liz was impersonating Carrie in a text that she sent, she had claimed that she was pregnant with Dave's child, oh, but Dave was snipped.
Oh, fuck.
So this, like, this whole, like, the whole thing with Carrie, like, stalking them is what brought Dave and Liz back into a relationship. Because mm-hmm. they had been, like, they stopped seeing each other when he first started dating Carrie. Hence why she showed up at his house that day to get her things. She wrote, Dave loves fat whore scratched into the side of his car.
Jesus.
And in Liz's car, she had scratched, whore stop seeing Dave. And at one point, she sent a text to Dave saying, I'll kill her. She stole my heart. She broke my dreams. She stole my future when she took you away from me. I will kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he even moved at one point,
yep.
hoping that it would stop.
Yeah, he did move. I think it was shortly after yeah. Liz's house caught on fire. She had to move, obviously, and he moved too because things were just getting too fucking wily. So he bought the gun and he moved.
Yeah. When they checked the car, like Carrie's car, because they had had it, it actually had already gone to a new owner. So they actually got it back from new owners to check. And that's when they found the blood in the seat.
Mm.
Yeah, see, it sucks. The bipolar disorder thing really fucking, like, really helped her to continue her fucking deceit.
Yeah. Well,
fucking yeah, crazy.
Wild,
huh?
wild, super twisty. Really insane. Got my attention, that one. Yeah. So, we hope you guys liked it. If you are on Patreon, you're hearing this
early,
a few days early. If you're not on Patreon, you're hearing it regular time, and you should get on Patreon because we're doing a lot of fun stuff. Early release for our regular episodes. Microbrews are all on there. We're going to have some other fun stuff coming for you guys soon.
We're hopefully going to have some merch coming out.
Yeah, and it's only $3 a month. So you're helping to support us get better equipment and not have to fumble with technical difficulties every single fucking time we try to record.
Yeah. Wouldn't be, as you said earlier, when we did our first recording of this.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be Homebrew Murder Crew if there wasn't a technical difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys don't know about that kind of stuff. But yeah. You will now.
But you will now. And like, we're going to do like unedited stuff. So you're going to get like raw footage and shit like that. Yeah. Video recordings and that sort of thing. Yeah. Apologies in advance for our Patreon members, because this one will not be video recorded due to those technical difficulties. So we're figuring it out. Next episode, we'll have it sorted out for you.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, hopefully. Anyways, you guys can follow us on our socials.
We're on Instagram at Homebrew Murder Crew.
We're on Facebook at Homebrew Murder Crew.
We're also on the Tiki Talks at Homebrew Murder Crew. And if you go and follow us, we will eventually be able to go live. And then everybody will be able to see our beautiful faces.
Yay! Woo-hoo! You can email us at homebrewmurdercrew @gmail.com. And also, you can give us a like on wherever you're listening to this. Give us some stars. Leave us a comment. Give us a thumbs up, whatever you want to do. That'll help us get some...
a little bit more traction.
Traction.
Yeah. And then we can bring you guys better quality recordings.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And we love you. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.